Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 882. Today, Amateur Traveler talks about knights and walled cities, megalithic temples and underground cities, beaches, boats, and balconies, as we go back to the country of Malta. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about Malta. No guest for this episode of Amateur Traveler, but I want to tell you about my recent trip in November of 2023 to Malta. Now, we've done two other shows on Malta before, one 15 years ago, so that one hardly counts, but one more recently than that, a couple years ago. In fact, I just replayed that show while I was in Malta because I wasn't planning on doing this episode. But now that I've written 4 blog posts and about 9,000 words on Malta, it feels like maybe I, in fact, have something to say about this pretty cool destination. So I ended up going to Malta because I was planning on going to Africa in the fall for a TBEX conference, a travel blog exchange conference that got canceled. So I ended up with some extra weeks of vacation that I'd allocated. I wanted to go someplace new that I'd never been, but also I was targeting someplace in Europe and someplace that you could see in a week. And Malta is one of those places that you can have a pretty amazing itinerary with a week-long trip. So let's start with that, with why you should go to Malta. The thing I love about Malta is the history. And if those of you who listen to the show know I'm a history buff, but we have history going back to Stone Age tombs. Plus, we've got walled cities like Valletta that I think are some of the most beautiful cities in Europe. Rugged coastline, water activities if you're there in the summer, which I wasn't. Plenty to do. And just a really beautiful country. I think it's worth a look, and a week is just about the right amount of time, I think, to spend on Malta. In terms of the itinerary, there are 3 main islands for Malta. Malta, the largest island by far, Gozo, which is a small island with a number of different cities on it. And then there's the small island of Kamina, which I didn't get to, but if you're there in the summer and you're there for a water-based itinerary, you're probably going to go to Kamina. The most well-known attraction there being the Blue Lagoon. I wanted to spend most of my time in the main island of Malta and then some time up in Gozo. And I looked at all of the different tours you could do, and there's a number of tours that you can do that are day tours from Malta up to Gozo and back, and didn't like how rushed they felt. There were 2 main things that I wanted to see while I was there. One was the
temple complex of Gigantia,
and we'll talk more about that later. And the other one was the main city of Victoria. It just didn't feel like I could do both on one of these tours that I was being offered. And they had a bunch of different things that I wasn't as interested in, like the little tourist trains and things like that. So I decided I was going to spend one night in Gozo and my other nights down in Malta and do 2 days up in Gozo. And then I built my itinerary around 2 fixed points. One is I had early on in the trip a whole day tour. Now, my tour was sponsored by Tourism Malta, but I do recommend the kind of one-day tour that'll give you some orientation, not just of the places to go in the island, but also of some of the history that's going to inform what you're going to be seeing. And then I also had tickets to one very special and hard to get in place, which is the Hypogeum. We'll talk more about that, but everything was built around those 2 fixed dates. I was doing the full day tour on Monday and then the Hypogeum on Tuesday. When I flew in on Saturday night, So the plan was Sunday through Wednesday on Malta, and then Thursday and Friday in Gozo, and then come back for a couple days in Malta. We'll get into more detail. You fly into Malta and into the international airport, which is down near the capital city of Valletta. And I will say that I don't speak Maltese, and so my pronunciation for a lot of the things in Malta will be suspect at best. Fortunately, Valletta is not a Maltese word. Maltese is influenced by Arabic as well as Italian, Sicilian especially, the very close ties between Malta and Sicily. And if you're trying to find Malta on a map, look for the exact middle of the Mediterranean, east-west, and then north-south. So south of Sicily and close to Tunis in Africa. And it has those connections to both Africa and Europe culturally. Lots and lots of different people have ruled Malta over the years, including a group of people we'll call the Temple Builders, that we'll be talking more time about, who built these megalithic temples way back in the Stone Age, older than the pyramids. And then the Phoenicians / Carthaginians, the Romans, the Arabs, the Byzantines, or Romans again, the Spanish, the Aragonese, the Knights of St. John, or also called the Knights of Malta. We'll talk more about them because they had quite a significant impact on the island. The French, and finally the English, and then the Maltese themselves. And all of those had an influence on the history and as well as the culture of the island. But also linguistically, you've got an island that speaks English fluently because they were under British rule for 150, 160 years, but also have this language that is very closely tied to Arabic. So that's the part that is a little harder for me to pronounce. In terms of getting around the island, I chose not to rent a car, although I don't think it's too hard to drive on Malta. The Maltese people I met kept telling me what bad drivers the Maltese were. I saw them driving. They're fine. If you're in the Mediterranean area, they drive about the same as everybody else from what I could see. But they do drive on the left because of the British influence, and I just prefer having a co-pilot when I drive on the left, and this was a solo experience. It's also fairly easy to get around Malta by bus, and so I got a bus pass and used that to get around. I was planning on getting a rental car for just one day to go off to some of the southwest corner of the island, thinking that that would be easier to do by rental car, which it probably would, but I ended up doing that by bus, and it worked out fine anyway. There's also car services available on the island. So I took an Uber, for instance, from the airport, but there are multiple different services like that that you can use for short trips on the island as well. The traffic can be pretty bad when you're down in the southeast corner near Valletta. During rush hour, it doesn't move very fast. It can be pretty slow. So if you can avoid rush hour in general, being on the roads, whether you're in a bus or a rental car or an Uber, you're going to be slow either way. So if you can avoid those times, that's going to help you with your trip. In the rest of the island, I don't think you're really going to run into that much traffic because most of the population of Malta is concentrated in that southeast corner of the main island. So I ended up staying in that southeast corner of the island. There are sort of four main areas. There are the three cities. And then north of that, Valletta, the main capital city, old walled city, and the three cities as well date back to the 1400s, 1500s. And then north of that is the city of Shlima, and north of that is St. Julian's. I ended up staying in St. Julian's. That's really the party central. If you wanted to stay in someplace and have great nightlife, I would recommend St. Julian's. It's a little farther from Valletta. And if you're taking a bus, most of the bus routes or many of the bus routes leave from the Valletta bus station. And so the closer you can be to that, the more convenient it's going to be. I was trying to stay actually in Shlima, but the long story that the hotels.com had the wrong description for a hotel. So I ended up staying in the wrong version of the Londoner Hotel. The one I was planning on staying at was in Shlima, right on the waterfront. And from there, you can actually take a very quick ferry for, I think it's 1.5 euro, over to Valletta to go see the capital city. And then when I came back to the island, I stayed just outside the walls of Valletta in the town of Floriana, which is really just an extension when Valletta grew so big that it outgrew its old city walls from the 1500s. The main activity I did on that first full day that I was there was the tour of the harbor, the Great Harbor. And I highly recommend that. It's a tour that tours the harbors both north and south of Valletta and gets in all the nooks and crannies and streams and such. And Valletta is one of the prettiest cities in Europe because it has these old walls from the 1500s, but you can't see them from the city quite as much as you can see them from the harbor. And so I think it is a city that needs to be seen from the harbor. Harbor cruise isn't too much, about 20 euros or so. There's a number of different ones that leave from Schlema. And that was really the main activity I wanted to do on that Sunday, and I highly recommend it, and I think doing it one of your first days there is great. Also, if you're going to do a food tour, this would probably be a good day for that too, to sort of learn some of the cuisine and places to eat and things like that, doing that early on in your trip. And there's a number of those that happen in Valletta or in the cities near there. I also just spent some time walking along the coast between St. Julian's, and I walked from St. Julian's down to Schlema, down to the water ferry and such. And Malta is a very rocky island. There are some beaches in Gozo and then some beaches in the north, but a lot of the coastline down here is rocks, and including pools that were built in the 1800s, carved out of rocks along the coast of Schlema. A lot of people were sunbathing on the rocks or were doing scuba diving, and Malta is a big scuba dive destination. I wasn't doing that on this trip. Again, my trip was a little less water-based because I was doing it in November. November turned out to be a good time to go, although I think October would be better. I ran into good weather, but typically November is going to be a little more rain. I was fortunate not to have to deal with rain through my entire trip, and it was shirt-sleeve weather. In fact, I should have worn shorts when I was walking along at that point because I just got too warm wearing jeans. But beautiful weather, beautiful country, beautiful rugged coastline. Take that harbor cruise, then grab some lunch at one of the restaurants there on the waterfront in Schlema, and then take the ferry across to Valletta and do explore the walled city because it is a very pretty city. It has some lovely public squares. It also has a lot of narrow lanes, sidewalk cafes. And then one of the characteristics of Valletta is there are a lot of balconies. And these look like kind of an Arab-style balcony that you would see where the ladies could look out but couldn't be seen, except that in Valletta they have glass and they're brightly colored on the building. So it's quite beautiful and also very characteristic of the city. It's not a city that I'd want to do a lot of driving in. In fact, if you do have a rental car, there are additional fees for driving in Valletta during the day because they're trying to keep cars out of the city. There's a great big parking lot out in Floriana just outside the wall. So if you do have a rental car and you stay further away, you could park your car and just walk into Valletta, and that's probably better anyway. I didn't do a tour of Valletta that day because the full day tour I was doing the next day was going to cover both Valletta and then the old capital city of Mdina in the middle of the island. But I walked around to some of the squares, and you can walk down to the Upper Baraka, which is one of the gardens that is up on top of the walls with a cannon where they fire off the gun to let the ships in the harbor adjust their clocks to make sure they have the right time on their clocks. This goes back to the age of sail, where you used your clock to help navigate and figure out your longitude. And so that was very important to have an accurate clock. They still fire off the cannon every day from the Upper Baraka. And then the second day is when I actually went in and did that an unusual tour in Valletta, and that's the underground tour. Now, one thing you need to know about the history of Malta before we talk about Valletta is that there was a great big siege of Malta in the 1500s. So the Knights of St. John, who were knights from the Crusader Knights who took care of people in the hospitals, they were the Hospitallers is their other name, and they had been forced out of the Holy Lands, especially the city of Acco or Acre, where they had their headquarters, down into Rhodes, and then had been besieged by Suleiman the Great, the Ottoman Turks, and forced out of Rhodes. And Suleiman at that point thought they would stop being a thorn in his side. They were known for their piracy and interfering with people who were on the Hajj and those sort of things. He was hoping he would get rid of them and they would be a nuisance. They ended up here in Malta. They were given Malta by the King of Spain. He wanted them to be a protection of this area of the Mediterranean from the expansion of the Ottoman Turks. After they were in Malta, they began seizing Turkish ships again. And so the Turks came in the year 1565, and there was the Great Siege of Malta, where the Malta was almost captured, but not quite captured by the Ottoman Turks. And they managed to have this great big victory. And after this victory, they built the city of Valletta so that if the Turks ever came back, they would have this great big walled defensible town. And that's why Valletta is the way it is. You can learn much more about the siege of Malta, either in the blog post I wrote about the history of Malta, but also you can learn more about it if you're in Malta by going to the Fort St. Elmo, which is at the end of the peninsula that Valletta is on. It's the eastern end of the peninsula. And the one of the big battles of the Great Siege was the capture of the original Fort St. Elmo by the Ottomans. It's kind of the Malta version of the Alamo or of the Spartans at Thermopylae, because they managed to hold out long enough that they delayed the Ottomans' conquest because they got into the summer and the Ottomans started dying from disease. And it was such a costly victory at Fort St. Elmo that it probably is what saved the Maltese, that and the final arrival of reinforcements from Sicily. But you can learn more about that at St. Elmo. But after they built this city, one of the things they did is they carved into the rock, because this whole city is built on rock. There's no flat area in Malta, as far as I can see. Most of Malta is very rocky and up and down, and the city of Valletta is that way. And they built cisterns and they built underground waterways to hold water, especially in case of a siege again, in case the Turks were ever to come back. Well, in World War II, when this island is now under British rule, then the people who are threatening Malta are not the Ottoman Turks at this point, but the Italians and the Germans. And this city was bombarded for 154 nights. They've dropped thousands of tons of bombs on Malta. And to protect the citizens, they took these passages that the Knights of Malta had built and they expanded them and lived underground. They built an underground city in Valletta that could hold up to 20,000 people. And what I did when I got there was I did a tour with my tour guide from the Malta Tourism Board of the underground city of Malta. This underground tour that dates back to these places where people lived during World War II. And a fascinating tour if you're not claustrophobic. Is a damp, claustrophobic, dark place. You get a headlamp to wear. You put on a hairnet and a helmet to protect you from bending over into the low passageways. And you descend down into this underground city. If you're a student of history, I'd recommend it. At the end of this tour, there's an audiovisual presentation that gives you a sense of what it would have been like to live under here and what the modern siege of Malta during World War II was like. If you've ever looked closely at a Maltese flag, in one corner is the Cross of St. George, which was given as an award. It was a medal, and it was given as an award by the King of England to the Maltese people for their courage during this time period, and they still display that on their flag today. The other thing we did on my full day tour is we went to the co-cathedral of St. John in Valletta. Now, this is St. John the Baptist, the Knights of St. John, that was their patron saint, and this is not the Cathedral of Malta, that's in Mdina, which is the old capital. But this was the co-cathedral because it's where the knights who ruled the island lived. And they had a fair amount of money. You can tell by going into this cathedral. It's fairly plain on the outside, but you go inside and it's over-the-top Rococo gold. It's quite resplendent. Two things to note when you're in the cathedral, and this is why it's helpful to have a guide here. One is that there are a number of different chapels along the sides, and each of those chapels corresponds to a different language group for the Knights of St. Malta. So the Knights of St. Malta were drawn in from all over Christendom, and there would be one group that came that were German-speaking, and the one group that would come that would be Italian-speaking. There was originally a group that came that was English-speaking from before the English Protestant Reformation. And so they would have eight different groups at various times that had both eight different chapter houses or auberges within the city of Valletta. And you will actually start the underground tour at one of those. But they also then had in the chapel eight different areas that are dedicated to that group of knights. When you know that, you can go in and say, oh, this one has the fleur-de-lis, or this one has the Habsburg eagles, and you can see the difference between the different ones. Then the other thing of note within the co-cathedral, there are two original large paintings by the artist Caravaggio, who lived for a time on Malta, one including the beheading of St. John the Baptist, of course, the patron saint of the Knights of St. John. The interesting story, the backstory behind this that I learned from my guide, was that Caravaggio came to Malta under a cloud of suspicion, basically on the lam. He was running from other charges and then left Malta because of something that he did on Malta. So Caravaggio, apparently an interesting character. Then on my full day tour, we went to one of the three cities for lunch. And I mentioned the three cities before, but these are three different peninsulas that come out from the south and point toward the city of Valletta here on the Grand Harbor. They're the city of Senglea, Burgu, and Cospicua. And Burgu is also known as Vittoriosa, or Victory, because basically this was the original spot where the Knights of St. John fought off the great siege in the 1500s. So we stopped there for lunch on the waterfront in Birgu at the restaurant Don Berto, which I would say is probably my favorite restaurant that I ate at while I was in Malta. Beautiful place with a great view of the harbor and the super yachts and the walled cities. It's quite spectacular in terms of being a picturesque place to eat lunch. That lunch was part of this tour, and again, this tour was paid for by the tourism board, and I thank them for that. Then we headed off to the middle of the island to the city of Mdina, got there right around sunset, maybe about 4 o'clock, and explored the city just a little bit, walking through the narrow streets of Mdina. This is called the Quiet City because very few people live in this city. It's a very small walled city, and I'm actually going to talk about Mdina later on in the trip when I went back there and spent a little more time there. But that basically was my whole day tour, and that's Monday. And then Tuesday, again, I had tickets for the Hypogeum, and they were about 1 o'clock, so it was planning a day around that tour. And what I wanted to do is go down to the southern part of the island before that tour and then head over to the Hypogeum, which is south of Valletta. And the first thing I did is I hopped a bus or a couple buses and went down to the coastal town of Marsaschlok. And Marsaschlok is a town that's best known for its colorful fishing fleet. And so people go down there to take pictures of the fishing boats, but also you can go there on Sunday. There's a farmer's market and there are some boat tours that lead from Marsaschlok. For those of you who don't know, and I did not know this, Marsa means harbor. And so Marsa Matro, which I've been to in Egypt, also harbor, and also Marseille comes from the same Arabic word for harbor. And then from there, I went over to the Gar Dalam Cave, and this is kind of one harbor over to the west from Marsaschlok. I walked from one to the other. I wouldn't really recommend that. It's not particularly a scenic route to get from one to the other. I would either hop an Uber or if you're in a rental car, just drive over. Now, one of the reasons I went to Gar Dalam Cave is this was a cave where they had found from the Ice Age skeletons of pygmy hippos and pygmy elephants. It's one of the only places you can see these. It isn't, I would say, the fanciest or most interesting place I went to in Malta, but I had a pass from Heritage Malta, which let me get into almost all of the different places. Didn't let me get into the Hypogeum. You have to buy that ticket separate. But because I had that pass, this museum was already paid for. And so it was just interesting to make a quick stop in here and see this cave and to see the skeletons of these very unusual animals that we don't have anymore. To tell you the kind of history that's piled on top of history in this island, that same cave that had these animals from the Ice Age had remains of a Roman ruin, it had remains of an old Iron Age fort, and had a watchtower from the 1700s and a pillbox from the time period of World War II. So it's just really history piled on top of history. And then I headed back towards the city of Valletta to Tarjan, and Tarjan is both the city name and the name of the first of the megalithic temples I went to. And I wouldn't say that this is my favorite of the megalithic temples, but it was interesting, but just not as well presented as some of the ones that I would see later. But still fascinating to see these things that are kind of like a smaller version of Stonehenge. So they're not as quite as large as stones as you're going to see at Stonehenge. They predate that structure. And you can also go in and walk in and amongst them. So it's quite different. It's a different style, but it's this temple that was built by the temple builders who we don't really know what happened to them. They left the island or died out or something. But one of the reasons to see this is if you're going to go to the Hypogeum, it's about 3 blocks away. And so it's easy to get to one from one to the other. And then I went to the Hypogeum, and the Hypogeum is an underground necropolis, so a place of burial, but from the Neolithic period. It's a 3-story structure that was carved out of the rock. So parts of it are natural cave, I would assume. And then parts of it are clearly carved to look like one of these megalithic temples like Tarjan. And so it's fascinating to see. You cannot bring your camera there. You can't bring your cell phone. So you've got to go on a guided tour, and you'll leave all that in a locker upstairs. But if you're a fan of history, it's interesting to see. I would definitely try and see it, but you're going to need to plan maybe a month or more ahead of time to get tickets, because they let in about 100 people a day. It's a very difficult ticket to get, and you do have to plan very far in advance. That's why I say I built my itinerary around this. And then I wanted to see more of Burgu or of Victoriosa, and so I went back to there on the bus after that and then went to Fort St. Angelo. And Fort St. Angelo would be that original site of the Fort of the Knights of St. John, the main fortification during the Great Siege. And even if you don't like history, it is at the end of one of these peninsulas of the three cities. It has a fantastic view of the city of Valletta and of the two other cities of the three cities on either side of it. So there's some interesting information there that presents the history of the spot, but also just a fantastic view from Fort St. Angelo. And so I recommend it. That was Tuesday. On Wednesday, my goal was to see more of these megalithic temples that were off in the southwest corner of the island. Southwest corner of the island, not as many people there, more open countryside. Again, that was the day I was planning on renting a car, but did not do that. And I didn't say, but the megalithic temples of Malta are UNESCO World Heritage Sites. And in the western part of the island, these two that are right next to each other in the same site are, one is spelled H-A-G-A-R space Q-I-M, and it looks like Hagarquim, but it is Hagarim, apparently. And the other one is something like Nardra. And this is where I say I have no confidence in my pronunciation of things Maltese. But these both are, I'd say, my favorite of the megalithic temples. If you get a chance to just see one site, this would be my favorite, in part because there's the two right next to each other, one up the hill, one down the hill by the sea, but also I think mostly because this had a very extensive audio guide as well as a very good museum that explained what is known about the temple builders. How would they move such large stones? And the answer to that appears to have been stone ball bearings about the size of a bowling ball. And so you can learn more about the people at this spot, I think, than any other. And so it definitely was worth seeing. There's two different sites, again, right next to each other. The first one at the top of the hill is probably easier if you have any sort of mobility issues, because the second one you do have to walk down the hill a little ways to get to and then back up again, obviously. But interesting sights and very well presented. Of all the temples, again, my favorite. And then I went to the Blue Grotto, which is south of there along the coast, and it's a place where you can go into one of the caves, and it's supposed to be a very beautiful cave because of the colors of the cave and the water and the light coming in and such. I was there on a day where the water was rough. I didn't even look to see if they had boat cruises because I wasn't going to get out there on that particular day. North of there, I was planning on getting to the Cliffs of Dingley, which are spectacular, beautiful rocky cliffs. I really just saw them from the bus, didn't really feel like stopping and going for a hike, but that is a popular spot for a hike there, the Dingley Cliffs. And then I kept going on the bus into Mdina and Rabat. And Mdina is the town we talked about before, the quiet city. And so I got a chance, though, this time to spend a little more time there. Got a chance to go to the cathedral there, which is the real cathedral of Malta, as well as wander through some of the side streets. Again, a very small city, so it doesn't take very long to see it. Just outside of the gates of Mdina, a small museum, again, for me with the Heritage Pass, not something I was going to pass up, that was a Roman villa. And so this was the remains of a Roman villa that was built there, because this was where the Roman capital was of the island back when it was known as Malia or Honey. Probably the most interesting thing from this, as well as a lot of sites of Roman villas around the world, are the mosaics that are left over, the mosaic floors, and some of the detailed mosaics were quite beautiful. But that's probably one of the best places to see some of the Roman ruins from the island. The city of Mdina would have been where the Roman governor was, and that would be interesting for those of you who have read the story of Malta when it appears in the book of Acts in the Bible, where Paul is shipwrecked on Malta and is brought to the governor, who is sick, and heals him. If you look from the walls of the city of Mdina off to the east, one of the places you can see is St. Paul's Bay, where the rocks were that we understood St. Paul was in a shipwreck in the first century. So then, speaking of first century and Roman ruins, Rabat, which is the more, I want to say it's the more modern city, but it is also an ancient city, but it's where more people live these days, and you can find more restaurants and such in Rabat. Rabat would be an interesting place to think about staying if you had a rental car, because it would be quiet at night. Mdina, everybody has recommended to me, go see Mdina at sunset and at night. And Rabat would be kind of in the center of the island, so it would be an interesting place to stay, again, if you had that kind of accessibility. But I wanted to go to Rabat to see the St. Paul's Catacombs. Now, St. Paul's Catacombs have nothing to do with St. Paul, although St. Paul was in the island of Malta, but they were catacombs and graves going back to both the Phoenicians, Carthaginians, and then to the Romans. And they're very well presented. You go to a museum first, and you can download an audio guide that will guide you through the many, 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 many different underground catacombs, lots of different entrances that you can go into. And you know I'm a big history buff. I did not go into all of these. For one thing, it's a little claustrophobic for sure, but also I was there towards the end of the day by this point and was running out of time. But I think you have to be a real history buff to go through all of them. But it was an interesting audio presentation, because your guide is supposed to be a Roman girl who is buried somewhere along your route. And they tell you about how the Romans would come down and they would have feasts down in these tombs. And you can see places where they would have these feasts with their dead relatives, or so their dead relatives could take part, so they could be remembered. So an interesting experience going down in the St. Paul's Catacombs, again, another underground necropolis. And that, for me, wrapped up Wednesday. And so Thursday, then, was my day to go to the island of Gozo. So I just took the bus to the northern tip of the island. There are ferries that go from Valletta, but there's an easy ferry that you can get from the northern tip of the island, and it's maybe a 20-minute ferry over to Gozo, to the island of Gozo. You can also get boats that will take you out to Camino as well, and again, a lot of people going out to Camino to visit the Blue Grotto. But I went up and took the ferry and then grabbed a bus and went into Victoria. So I had brought with me my luggage because I was moving to Victoria for one night. I stayed in the Duke Hotel in Victoria, which is a lovely boutique hotel right in the center of town, about two blocks from the bus station. So that worked out very well. Victoria itself, beautiful city. Talk a little bit about it in a minute. But then I grabbed a bus over to the Gigantea Temple Complex. And so this is, again, one of the ancient megalithic temples. Probably, again, not my favorite. Told you where my favorite was. But one of the things I loved about this particular site, while the temples themselves are a little less finished and under a lot more scaffolding when I was visiting, the museum had a lot more artifacts than any of the other ones that I had been at. And so you could see, for instance, the corpulent figures that are often associated with burials in that prehistoric period, or you could see other figurines that had much more typical human characteristics carved out of stone that were left there. And it's just interesting to see these things from older than the pyramids and some of the artwork and how well developed it is, even by that time period. And also visited right across from there, within view of the entrance, is a windmill site
where you can see how windmills were used for
grinding the grain that you'd use to bake your bread. Walked back then to Victoria. Didn't want to wait for a bus because the bus system in Gozo is very simple. Everything ends in Victoria pretty much, but it doesn't run all that often on some of these routes, and this route was a little less often. And then in Victoria, I went up to the Cittadella, and this is the citadel that sits above Victoria. And Victoria was the subject of a sack by the Ottoman Turks before the Great Siege, and everyone was carried off. Almost everyone on the entire island was carried off into slavery. And so, as you could imagine, they didn't want that to happen again. And so there's a rather imposing citadel or fortress. And the Cathedral of the Assumption is also in that fortress. It's a wonderful place to visit. Beautiful views from that of the almost the whole island. You can see you're in the middle of the island. You're up on the high point. And it would be a wonderful place if you were trying to keep your eye on people coming to carry you off into slavery. It'd be a great spot to get a view of someone coming. And also then, obviously, lovely views for tourists as well. And then had my dinner that night, went down to the main square, St. George's Square, right in front of St. George's Basilica. Got a chance to peek in when there was a service going on in the Basilica. If you ever get a chance to attend or even peek in like I did into one of these old churches when the choir is singing and the place is filled with music, you really get a much more of a sense of what these places are like, much better than just coming and touring a cathedral or a church that was built in the Middle Ages.
That'd be Thursday, and then on Friday I did a little more exploring of Gozo before I headed back to Malta.
So I went over to San Blas Tower, which is one of the many watchtowers. So I went over to what is the eastern end of the island and did a hike out to this old watchtower that was built by the Knights of St. John back in the 1500s, I think. And then also headed over to Ramla Beach, which is one of the better known beaches on the island. I'd have to say it was a beach. It had sand. It was yellow sand. And compared to a lot of beaches I've been in Europe, it was fine. You're not going to go there if you've been someplace that has amazing great sand beaches that go on for miles and be struck by the beauty of this. But if you're there in the summertime, it's going to get quite warm, and going to the beach is going to be a great experience. The other place I thought about going but did not get to is out to the other end of the island, to the west end of the island, to the Inland Sea, for instance, which is another popular area for tourists, a hidden lagoon for diving and swimming in that part of the island, and the Blue Hole. And love to get back there sometime. If I get back to Gozo, that's probably what I'll do. I liked Gozo. It's just a smaller island.
Victoria is a beautiful little city. The Cittadella was nice. I was glad that I spent one night there rather than just doing a quick tour to and from, but you would also enjoy it, I think, if you did a tour just to and from, as so many people do. And then I hopped back on a bus, hopped back on a ferry, took the bus again down to just outside of Valletta. As I said, I stayed the last two nights in Floriana. And in Floriana, I stayed at the Tritone Valletta Boutique Hotel, which was just in walking distance from the main gate, the main fountain area, and the main bus station of Valletta. And then just used that last full day as a chance to go back into Valletta and to see some of the things that I hadn't seen. So I went back again to the Upper Baracca and then took the Baracca lift. So the Upper Baracca, as I mentioned, is this garden and set of batteries, these cannons, up above the wall. But if you want to get down to the waterfront there, you can take an elevator for, I think it's €1, that takes you basically all the way down to the waterfront. And then from there, you could go either to the cruise dock, which is there at the southern part of Valletta, or you could take the Gozo Fast Ferry, is where you'd find that. The water taxi, that's also where you'd find the ferry to Sicily. If you wanted to extend this trip on to Sicily, you would go there. But I instead walked over then back into the city through the Victoria Gate and over to the Lower Baracca, which is again another small park with gardens and wonderful views of the city, to the Siege Memorial. That's the World War II Siege Memorial, not the Great Siege Memorial. And then on to the tip of the island to Fort St. Elmo. And Fort St. Elmo is something I would highly recommend for the history buffs, because the National War Museum is in Fort St. Elmo. And it does the best job of really telling you about the Great Siege or about the Siege of World War II and some of that history in between there. It's very well presented in, I think, four or five different buildings in Fort St. Elmo. And then also you're at the tip of the island with great views back over the three cities and out over the Mediterranean as well. And so that was a wonderful thing. And then walked back into the city and had dinner and lunch within Valletta that day. Lots of great cafes, lots of great sidewalk cafes in the city. And one thing about the food, so there is traditional Maltese food. So for instance, one traditional pastry is a pastici, and pastici come in two flavors. They are a flaky pastry either filled with ricotta, which I would vote for, or mushy peas, which means the Brits were there just far too long, if anybody thinks that's a good idea. But that's just my opinion, I understand. But there also is quite a lot of Italian cuisine or Italian-type cuisine. Again, you're so close to Sicily, and they had such close ties for so many years. And then there was also lots of international cuisine. You could find your burgers, you could find your Italian, your Irish pub, of course, because they're everywhere in the world, as far as I can tell. I ate doner kebabs at Turkish restaurants multiple times and went out to a fancy Indian restaurant in Valletta the last night I was in the city. So good food. I ate probably more from some of the international cuisine, not the hamburgers. I don't do hamburgers in Europe unless I'm at a Five Guys or something like that, because otherwise I've just had disappointment. But pizza, calzones, spaghetti, pasta, doner kebab, all sorts of good food in the island, but especially also then here in some of the main drags within Valletta, as well as over in St. Julian's, and then also in Schlemel, especially along the waterfront in Schlemel. In terms of where to stay, I talked about where I stayed. I have also had wonderful recommendations for some of the more fancy places up in St. Julian's, for instance, impressive Westin hotels, and there's a Marriott hotel by the one beach there in Schlemel. And I've talked to people who've stayed there for a more fancy and probably more romantic experience. I was there by myself, so romantic was not what I was looking for. I talked about getting around, and I've got a whole article on that if you're interested in that. Again, I did get around by bus. There was at least one moment, though, where my confidence that I knew what I was doing was quickly dashed because I went to the main bus station to buy a bus pass for a week, which turned out to be great. You could get on and off the buses and just use the bus pass. What I did not know, though, is you can't get in on and off every bus. There are some buses that are TD routes, and those, instead of being a €2 cost, are a €3 cost, and the bus pass that I had, the 7-day Explore card, did not work on those buses. So I've caught a bus pass, walked onto the most direct route back to the hotel I was staying at, and was quickly told, your bus pass doesn't work on this bus. So something to be aware of. There are a couple different options there, and just check out the blog post I did on getting around to know more about that. There are also hop-on, hop-off buses, if that is your jam, both in Malta and in Gozo, and I included the schedules and what they include in that blog post, which I'll include as a link in the show notes. If diving is more your thing, I suggest you go back and listen to that last episode we did on Malta with guests from Malta, the Cheeky Travelers, who I had dinner with while I was in the island. Wonderful to see them and meet them in person. But they are more divers and had more information about that than I have for you. As I go to wrap this up, I'll ask myself the same questions we always ask people. If I'm standing in the prettiest spot, where am I standing and what am I looking at? And I am probably in Valletta, and I'm either by the elevator or I'm by the upper Baraka. And you've probably seen photos from the upper Baraka looking out on the three cities, especially looking out on the walls of Fort St. Angelo and the mega yachts along the waterfront there and the other fort to the right of it and blue water everywhere. Boats crisscrossing, coming and going, and then everywhere, everything built out of this golden sandstone colored material, which is what color Malta is, because it has buildings built out of this natural stone from the island. And so it all has this kind of tone, and it's just a beautiful spot. I'll include that in the show notes, this picture that I'm talking about. One thing that makes me laugh and say, only in Malta, this island is rock. There is just rock everywhere. It's really hard to picture how much rock there is. As I was walking some of the countryside, I mentioned walking from Marsaschlag over to the next town, and I was walking through fields is the way that the Apple Maps was directing me. And the fields all have rock walls surrounding them. They're little tiny fields, and it still looks like they were growing rocks. I mean, there's just rocks everywhere. Very rocky island, the coast with people sunbathing on the rock and such. Beautiful, but very rocky island. And then if I had to summarize Malta in just three words, I would say temples, knights, and rocks. And again, I hope you don't mind that I did an episode on Malta so quickly after I replayed one. But I was struck. It is a very beautiful island in its very Maltese way. Again, Valletta, I think, is one of the most beautiful cities I've seen in the world. Certainly one of the most beautiful cities in Europe. And I recommend a trip to Malta. It's easy to do. English is everywhere. The driving on the left might be a little intimidating, but easy to get around. Lot to see. Thanks, as always, to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in becoming a patron of the show or just learning more, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. I had some feedback on the show last week about Tokyo, the nerd guide to Tokyo. Basically, one person said both Matthew and I pronounced everything Japanese wrong. That's probably true, but still I think worth doing because we had other feedback, for instance, from Crystal, who said absolutely loved this episode. So different from the other episodes, but in the best way. And that's one of the reasons I did that. I will have people on. It's always interesting as I'm trying to decide who to have on the show. Some people obviously can say the names very well, but that's because they're native speakers and they may have trouble being understood in English, and yet other people will have trouble with the names, but will give us a very good itinerary and will help you know whether you should go, whether this is something you'll appreciate, understand, and enjoy. And that's really my goal here. And yes, sometimes we screw up the words. I know I did it in this episode. I'm sure I can't say some of those Maltese words, but I hope it gave you an idea whether you would like Malta or not. Program note, if you're listening to this episode when it comes out, next week's episode will be a repeat episode, unfortunately, because it will be my father's memorial service. My father, Ed Christensen, died this week at the age of 97. He was an amazing dad and a great storyteller. If I have any storytelling gifts, they come from him. Dad, I miss you. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, put a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com, and thanks so much for listening.